You've heard again and again about the balance in this practice between energy and relaxation, or effort and relaxation. And tonight I want to focus on relaxation. Yoga guru Jonathan Faust says it's easier to ride a horse in the direction that it's going. So we're going to start there. This was quite a prominent element in John Travis's retreat, the encouragement to relax in the practice, to not get too caught up in what we're trying to do or where we're trying to get, but to be with the element of resting back, resting back into the practice. That was such a welcome thing to hear. Start with a little Sylvia Boorstein from her book, It's Easier Than You Think. And this is her first chapter called Spiritual is Ordinary. She says, a few years ago I was teaching in another city and the person who was to be my host telephoned me in advance to see if I had any special food requirements. I appreciated his concern and explained my preferences. I also mentioned that I don't normally eat much for breakfast, but that I do like coffee in the mornings. He replied in a very surprised voice, "You drink coffee?" I realized I had just made a heretical confession. I needed to do some fast mind scrambling to find a graceful way to explain to my host without losing my spiritual stature that I do indeed drink coffee. A dear friend of mine, as he has become more and more established as a meditation teacher, has become less and less hesitant about telling people that he loves football games. He even admits he gets very excited about the games, cheering at his television set as if he were sitting in the stadium. No dispassionate attitude of, may the best team win for him. I know he has a wonderful level of understanding, and he behaves like a regular person in the regular world. Just a couple of little examples about relaxing back into the meditation practice. You'll remember that the instructions about the posture in this practice are also a balance between energy or effort and relaxation. If we get too tight with the posture, the sitting will reveal that, and the mind will be tight as well. If we're too relaxed in the posture, we all know what happens. So it seems that the tighter posture reflects a kind of a body armor, a sense of almost lack of trust, so that I have to do something or I have to be somebody. There's the feel of that in the tight body posture. Whereas the more relaxed posture, there's a sense of being able to trust, being able to release, be able to let go into the moment. Jack says we can just relax a lot, that our job is to show up. This means physically show up with my body, show up with my alert mind, show up for the moment, being present right here and right now, showing up partly has to do with the physical being here, and partly has to do with bringing the mind back and the willingness to be present here and now. Showing up, looking and listening, and not judging. Judging takes effort. It reflects and also reinforces that tightness that I was talking about. Whereas a release of judgment and letting go is more of a stance of trust. Peace and contentment are our natural state of mind, not necessarily our normal state of mind, but our natural state of mind. And the fact that everything comes and goes is essential. That's impermanence. The rest is just conditioning. This is where the breath becomes so reflective of the rest of the whole practice, because the breath is the quintessential piece of watching something come, stay for just a moment, and then go without our need to control it. We all are probably familiar with those moments, especially early on in the practice, but maybe later too, where we're tempted to breathe. You know, where we somehow believe that if we don't breathe, it won't happen, which is a totally different stance than the stance of watching the breath as it enters, stays for just a moment, and then leaves. The contrast is there in the breath, and it's no accident that we use the breath as the primary focus initially for the practice. Achan Cha said, letting go is all. Letting go is all. That's the whole practice. You maybe didn't want to know that, but this teacher said it's true. We are awakening to a mysterious process, and we don't do it. It happens. And we're learning how to be here for it. This process may show up differently in different people. As you go along in the practice, you'll notice that people's lives look different, and people's relationship to the practice is different, and even you as an individual will some days or some weeks have this relationship with the practice, and next week it'll be entirely different. Sometimes there'll be struggle, and sometimes there'll be deep rest. So it comes and goes as a different appearing phenomenon. But the overall process is one of learning to trust that that's happening as it's supposed to happen for you and you and me. The process is completely trustworthy. It can only take you one place, and that's to wake up. It's the only place to go. If you thought there you were going to lose the directions or get lost on a detour, whatever, maybe for a little while, but in the long run, the process is trustworthy, and we're all headed for the same waking up. Shakyamuni Buddha tried for some years through the ascetic practices to whip the mind into shape, and almost killed himself. He almost died in the process and realized that he was not getting any closer to what he had really hoped for. So he reached a point where he found that he needed to release, to let go, to settle back. That's where the middle way comes from. The practice of Vipassana involves an organic shedding of conditioning. It happens by itself. We cultivate it by sitting on the cushion or on the chair. But the process happens by itself. Shedding of conditioning that has limited our sense of spaciousness and timelessness of reality. As we come to see our true nature through practice, obstacles begin to fall away by themselves. A lot of times the question comes up, how do I get this to happen? Or how do I make something go away or make something happen? And this is partly just the Western mindset that we have to do it. But we don't have to get anything to happen. We only have to cultivate the ability to sit with what is. That's what we're doing. It's so revolutionary. We're not doing anything. My favorite Buddhist cartoon shows the old monk sitting by the young monk in, it looks like a zendo, and the young monk has a quizzical look on his face like he doesn't understand, and the old monk, wrinkled face, says, "Nothing happens next. This is it." So letting go of what? Well, obviously letting go of attachments of all kinds. Attachment to sense pleasures, attachment to ideas and opinions, attachment especially to who we think we are. That's the toughie. But it's all part of the letting go. It's all part of the releasing. John Travis calls it the thinning out of who you thought you were. I love that way of saying it, that it thins out over time. Pema Chodron, of course, has some words about this. This is her chapter called Lighten Up. And she's talking about resistance. Resistance, which is, again, part of that contracted body posture and part of that contracted feeling of the mind that closes around things. We all know what that feels like. There's a lot of joy as your burden begins to lessen, and it comes from doing anything that begins to change the pattern of fearing and wanting to resist what's unpleasant. Resistance is really what causes the pain. Anything that begins to lighten up that resistance helps us to relax and open and celebrate. Celebrate! Sooner or later, you will find yourself in a situation where you can't change the outer circumstances at all. Does this sound familiar? And you realize it all comes down to how you relate to things, whether you continue to struggle against everything that's coming at you or you begin to work with things. We practice and we live in order to be able to relax and lighten up and not make such a big deal out of everything that happens. I have a friend that wrote a book. I think the book was called Turning on Delight. And the phrase she used in it was, recalibrating your big deal scale. The key to feeling at home on this planet with your body and mind and emotions is to feeling worthy to live here comes from being able to lighten up. This earnestness, this seriousness about everything in our lives, including the practice, this goal-oriented, we're going to do it or else attitude, is the world's greatest killjoy. Just keep your eyes open and your ears open and stay awake. When your aspiration is to lighten up, you begin to have a sense of humor. Things just keep popping up, popping your serious state of mind. You don't actually have to be happy, but being curious without a heavy judgmental attitude helps. If you are judgmental, you can be curious about that. Relaxation as preparation for death. That's very much on some of our minds tonight, as some friends and family are either looking directly at death or maybe soon. Look at the natural world and watch the leaves fall. Watch the leaves fall. I don't see any fear there. I don't see any resistance. It's quite extraordinary at this time of year to have this marvelous show where they just fall out of their normal place of being onto they don't know what. They don't resist falling. What good would it do? What good does it do us? We are falling. We are falling. We're on our way to death. Yeah. So it's not going to change that, to resist it. Relaxation becomes a huge benefit on this trip. So we're encouraged to release resistance to the present moment, just as it is. Again, this is why watching the breath is so important and so urgent, because this is our training ground. If you can't watch each breath and receive it as it is, how can you possibly receive the next moment or of death? This sweet little poem, sitting quietly, doing nothing. Spring comes, and the grass grows by itself. This is Tara Brach from her book, Radical Acceptance. And there are a couple of pages here that are just so rich. I want to read you from these pages. This is her chapter called The Sacred Pause, Resting Under the Bodhi Tree. In the 1950s, a few highly trained pilots in the U.S. Air Force were set a life or death task: to fly at altitudes higher than ever before attempted, going beyond the Earth's denser atmosphere. They found, much to their horror, that the ordinary laws of aerodynamics no longer existed. As Tom Wolfe describes it in The Right Stuff, a plane could skid into a flat spin like a cereal bowl on a waxed formica counter and then start tumbling, not spinning and diving, but tumbling end over end. The first pilots to face this challenge responded by frantically trying to stabilize their planes, applying correction after correction. The more furiously they manipulated the controls, the wilder the ride became. Screaming helplessly to ground control, "What do I do next?" they would plunge to their deaths. This tragic drama occurred several times until one of the pilots, Chuck Yeager, inadvertently struck upon a solution. When his plane began tumbling, Yeager was thrown violently around the cockpit and knocked out. Unconscious, he plummeted toward Earth. 7 miles later, the plane re-entered the planet's denser atmosphere, where standard navigation strategies could be implemented. Yeager came to, steadied the craft, and landed safely. He had discovered the only life-saving response that was possible in this desperate situation. Don't do anything. Take your hands off the controls. This solution, as Wolf puts it, was the only choice you had. It countered all training and even basic survival instincts, but it worked. In our lives, we often find ourselves in situations we can't control, circumstances in which none of our strategies work. Helpless and distraught, we frantically try to manage what is happening. We make a mistake at work, we scramble to cover it up or go out of our way to make up for it. We head into emotionally charged confrontations, nervously rehearsing, strategizing. The more we fear failure, the more frenetically our bodies and minds work. We fill our days with continual movement, mental planning and worrying, habitual talking, fixing, scratching, adjusting, phoning, snacking, discarding, buying, looking in the mirror. What would it be like if right in the midst of this busyness, we were to consciously take our hands off the controls? Stop our mental computations and our rushing around, and for a minute or two, simply pause and notice our inner experience. Taking our hands off the controls and pausing is an opportunity to clearly see the wants and fears that are driving us. During the moments of a pause, we become conscious how the feeling that something is missing or wrong keeps leaning us into the future, on our way to somewhere else. This gives us a fundamental choice in how we respond. Charlotte Jokobek, Zen teacher and author, teaches that the secret of spiritual life is the capacity to return to that which we have spent a lifetime hiding from, to rest in the bodily experience of the present moment, even if it's a feeling of being humiliated, failure, abandonment, or unfairness. Through the sacred art of pausing, we develop the capacity to stop hiding, to stop running away from our experience. sitting quietly, doing nothing. Spring comes, and the grass grows by itself.
Exhausted mind, beaten helplessly by karma and neurotic thoughts, like the relentless fury of the pounding waves in the infinite ocean of samsara. Rest in natural peace. rest in nature, to rest, to find rest. Clear?
We continue to remember those that are close to our hearts that are suffering tonight. May they have ease of being. May they feel safe. May they have peace.